Next on our agenda will be a financial report on the university by interim and soon-to-be non-interim Vice President and Chief Financial Officer and Comptroller Avijit Ghosh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to cover two topics my presentation today. First of all, the FY19 state appropriations. You heard from President Colleen already. I want to put some meat onto it. And the second is our long-term capital plan that we have reviewed. So you already heard that we did get a timely state budget. The president said this was the first time in his three-year tenure that this happened. This is probably the first time in a decade that we have had a timely state budget and without a cut to higher education. And I think I need to stress the importance of the sense of confidence that it brings not only to people in higher education, but especially the prospective students and their parents about sort of the end of the period of transition and uncertainty that we have been going through. I hope this is the beginning of that end of that period. So the budget that was appropriate for the University of Illinois is just shy of $600 million, which includes an $11.6 million increase, a 2% increase from the previous year. Of this, about $60 million is for designated purposes like the hospital, the Perry Research Institute, and a few other items like that. They're designated for that. And the rest is for the general funds. I think it's also important to state that about $538 million of this appropriation comes from what's known as EAF, or the Educational Assistance Fund, and the rest from GRF. And the importance is that the Educational Assistance Fund is a dedicated fund for education, so it's not competing with all other users of the state, so it's a little bit more assurance that we'll get the money on time, okay? We also have a level MAP funding of $401 million, and the MAP funding is very critical for affordability for the state of Illinois and to provide scholarships for Illinois students with financial needs. The legislature also appropriated $25 million for this new scholarship program called Aim High. This is a new scholarship program which is not necessarily tied to financial need. This is a new program which ISAC, the Illinois State Student Assistance Corporation, is going to administer, and they're still trying to work out how to administer this program, and we will obviously get a share of this because this is for all public universities. We also got capital appropriation. There was $116 million of capital appropriation for FY. This is really reappropriation from FY 2010. These are projects that were first supposed to be funded in 2010, never got funded, so now it has been reappropriated again, which includes the UIC Chemical Technology Building, which many of you might remember, or some of you might remember. It is infamous for the lack of funding that accompanied it. Then there's the dentistry school, but also the bioprocessing or IRBL project in here, and the public safety building in Springfield. All of these projects has been reappropriated again. Okay. In addition to that, we have $29 million, or actually $28 million of capital renewal funds from the state. These are for deferred maintenance programs and high priority deferred maintenance program. These are also things that were appropriated in the past but never funded. Okay. The state also funded a $75 million fund for deferred maintenance for higher education, and this is to be shared by all public universities as well as community colleges. So again, we'll get a share of this. That's what we hope. I think it's important to note that these are all funds that are allocated to CDB, or the Capital Development Board, so it'll be administered by the Capital Development Board. And these are all contingent on bond financing. We have not been given an exact timetable for the bond financing, but we hopefully that will happen in the near future. As the president mentioned also, we have a $500 million for capital appropriation for Illinois Innovation Network and the DPI, which has been already mentioned. I should also note that regarding the pension program, in the governor's budget, there was a proposal to shift 25% of the normal cost back to the universities this year, and that was not passed by the legislators. That was not included in the budget. But we did have a new rule about what's known as the 3% rule. And let me explain it this way. When for the traditional defined benefit program, the way the annuity payments are calculated is look at your last four years or the last 4 years amongst your top last 10 years, the highest pay that you get for 4 years in a row, okay? And what this is saying is that if anybody gets a pay increase of more than 3% during that time period, then the additional pension obligation that is accrued because of that money is above 3%, the university will be responsible for it, okay? So it's a complex calculation. We typically get the calculation only afterwards, you know, post hoc, not pre-approvals. And we believe that this will, there is already a rule about 6%, which now the university is responsible for any pay increases above 6%, the pension obligation for that. Now they've changed that to 3%. We believe that annual cost of this is going to be about $3 million for the university. The other bit of news I want to share with you is that on June 30th, at the end of the fiscal year, there was only $26.5 million receivable from FY17 and FY18 from the state. As you can see, that's sharp contrast to what has happened in the past. If you look at FY16 and FY17 and why you're wondering it was zero, because there was technically no appropriation. So technically, you cannot have a receivable if there was no appropriation. But all previous years, you can see, there was a very high levels of receivable at the end of the year. So I want to, that's my sort of very brief summary of the state budget, which you have been hearing about. And unless there are questions, I would move on to the next topic.
Did so they actually fund those capital projects?
No, those capital projects are supposed to be funded through a bond issuance, and those have not been issued yet.
Okay. Just a quick one on the 3% rule.
Yes, sir.
Does that limit the benefit to the employee, or does it just mean the university pays?
The university it does not limit the benefit. It is just the university takes on the obligation of paying for it. Okay. So on the long-term capital plan, you know, earlier in January of this year, the board directed us to develop a long-term capital plan. So in collaboration with the chancellors, we have been working with the three universities to develop such a plan. What I want to do today is to provide you with a preview of that plan, and then we'll be coming back later in the fall with a more final product of this plan. It was Winston Churchill who said that we shape our buildings, thereafter they shape us. I don't know the context in which he said this, but it's definitely very applicable for universities. Buildings, the physical infrastructure, is essential to delivering an excellent educational experience for our students. It impacts how we teach, how students learn, the research we do, and the services we provide. As you are aware, a significant part of our physical infrastructure is quite aged and is reaching obsolescence and needs to be reshaped and sometimes replaced. So we started off with four questions. Can you? Okay. We started off with four questions. What is our total need? What are our priorities? How much can we invest? And how would we fund those investments? Okay. So we worked with each universities to perform a needs analysis, and this was very thorough, going back to each department, each college, to look at what their needs are. And we put it together, and then we have also, we try to categorize those projects by priority. And this includes academic, auxiliary, administrative, athletic, and actually should also be told that it included health facilities. Okay, so it's physical infrastructure, not other kinds of capital. Okay. So altogether, we identified 510 projects with an estimated cost of nearly $6 billion. This is a 10-year time frame that we are looking at, the 10-year capital need. 510 projects with an estimated cost of about $6 billion. Spread across the three locations, you can see the number of projects. About 67% of the projects are in Urbana, 27% in Chicago, and you can see the total estimated cost of those projects, how they're spread out. About $4 billion in Urbana, 1.5 in Chicago, and $345 million in Springfield. Now, these are the need. And you can also, there are a variety of different kinds of projects. Some are small, some are large. You can see 72% of all the projects are below $5 million, but they constitute only about 10% of the total cost. 12% of the projects are above $25 million, and they consume about 80% of the total cost. So those are your major projects, major new buildings, which are above $25 million. If you look at some of the priority projects, there are about 332 projects were identified as priority projects, and that estimates to about $3.2 billion. And 71 of those projects were greater than $5 million. Okay. Academic projects, academic buildings, constitute about 68% of the, this is the value of the projects. Not the number of projects, but the value of the projects. 68% is on academic buildings. And one of the concerns we had previously that in the past few years, we have not focused enough on rebuilding academic facilities, so it's very good that we are seeing the emphasis on academic facilities. Auxiliary is 23, health, athletic, and very little bit for administrative positions. If you look at it in terms of different types of projects, new buildings are about 52%. New buildings. There are about 30 new buildings that have been proposed. Okay. Includes ambulatory surgery center, you heard earlier. It includes the College of Engineering instructional facility here. It includes that there are a number of projects that renovations about 24%, remodeling and additions, and then deferred maintenance, pure deferred maintenance, which is typically heating and ventilation systems, roof system, windows, and things like that. Okay. I should add that there's already $1 billion of projects which are currently underway. Okay. Some of it is in the planning and design, about a quarter of it is in the planning and design, and the rest is under construction. These are projects that have been approved by the board in the past and other projects that are already in construction. So obviously there's significant need, and the question is how much can we invest, okay? And there are a number of different ways of looking at it. You know, one of the things you can see is that past, we have invested about $300 million a year. The president talked about this already in his remarks, about $300 million a year. That's one way of thinking about it. Can we continue that, okay? The other way of thinking about it is There are these two indices that are commonly used. One is the capital spending ratio, which looks at how the capital spending in relation to the depreciation that's going on. And the second is capital investment as a percentage of your operating cost that you're doing, okay? So this is for FY18, this is where we stand. We're about spending what we are depreciating, okay? But if you look at the median peers, whereas Moody's either A3 or A1 rated institutions, they're spending typically about 1.5 times what they're depreciating annually. So you might say we are not spending as much as most of our peers are doing as a norm, and what is, from a rating agency's perspective, what's the acceptable level of spending. Okay. Our capital investment to operations is also lower than most of our peers. So we, from a purely financial, rating agency perspective, we have room to spend somewhat more annually. So for example, given our level of depreciation, if we spend 1.5 times the depreciation level, we could be spending about $400 million a year. And still, in relationship to our operations, will be still less than the A1 median value of spending. The question then, of course, becomes how would we fund it? Okay. We have, there are these five sources which we typically fund things from: the state appropriation, capital reserves that we put away, gift funds, there's a facility maintenance fee, and then institutional funds, purely from your operating expenses, as part of your operating expenses. People also talk about public-private partnerships we've talked about, and debt financing. Now, these really don't give you money. This is a way of transferring future funds to the present, okay? So ultimately, these get funded through gifts or institutional funds or some other way you have to repay the debt, okay? There's been a lot of interest in public-private partnerships, so I thought I'll spend just a moment talking about it. What public-private partnerships is doing is essentially utilizing off-balance sheet private capital, okay? So it's somebody else who's taken the debt on your behalf, okay? But it also shifts the construction risk to the private developer instead of the university taking it. And typically, these private public partnerships, the P3s, use a design-build process to deliver capital projects, which is more efficient than the way that we do it, okay? It takes much less time. So, for example, the project we're doing in Chicago right now, we're probably doing it at 60%, takes 60% of the time it would have taken us to do it ourselves, okay? And it also takes advantage of some construction cost efficiencies, potentially, because it's done faster, delivered faster. Okay. So this is the project that's going on in Chicago with our P3. We're also, right now, evaluating a potential P3 project to do in Urbana for the College of Engineering. The way it works is the university will contract with a developer. The developer would then partner with a 501c3 organization that has been specially approved by IRS as tax-exempt financial conduit. So it's important for us to get that tax exempt status. So there are a certain number of 501c3s which have been specially certified by the IRS, okay? So the developer then contracts with architects, engineers, contractors, and then utilizes the Illinois Finance Authority to issue tax exempt bond. Now it's important to stress the developer still has to meet all the university requirements in terms of design expectation, design conditions, and everything else. So those are still very much operational in these projects. Then the university essentially contracts to make annual payments. And after the developer's cost and fees are recovered, the building reverts back to the university. Okay. University may provide some upfront equity to speed up that payment process. So you're probably going to see more P3 projects that are coming. It's become a lot of private investors are willing to put money into educational campuses, and that's one of the things we're seeing. But it's important to remember this is still a debt that we are incurring, okay? So it's not going away. So if we look at our debt financing, that we have $1.38 billion of debt right now, doing a variety of different kinds of projects. So if you think of what's our ability to take more debt in the future, one is if we retire current debt, and then secondly, do we have capacity to even issue more new debt, okay? Our current debt is 1.3. In the next 5 years, we'll be paying off about $435 million of principal, and then the 5 years following that, we'll be paying us. So in the next 10 years, we'll be paying off about half our debt, current debt, principal. So that frees up and gives us some opportunity for doing new projects as we free up more of our principal by repayments of the debt. Okay. Then the question is, do we have capacity to get more debt? And the way you have to look at it is to look at how the rating agencies will see it so that you can still maintain your debt, your bond rating, and be able to see it. So these are the typical kinds of ratios that rating agencies look at, and we have looked at what's our current, how do we stand currently on the first column, how do we stand currently with those ratios? What would happen if we take $400 million additional debt? And then we had compared that to the median A1 rated universities, and then the median of the comprehensive public universities. And in each case, we do better than those median A1 or median comprehensive, except for monthly days of cash on hand, okay? Other than that, in each of these categories, even with $400 million of extra debt, we would be in a better position than the median A1 rated institution. So which means that we can consider some release of additional debt. So if you look at it, we have $400 million of additional debt capacity, and in the next 5 years, we'll be retiring $435 million of principal. That gives us about a capacity of $835. Now, we do have a commitment of $191 million to release more bonds for approved projects, projects of which are already underway. So that gives us about $650 million in the next 5 years. Now, that's not necessarily that we should do it, but we should know that we have the capacity, okay? So our next steps is to refine these priority projects, especially for the ones that we would hope to build in the next 5 years. We'll be working with the chancellors and the provost and other campus officials to sort of refine that list of priority projects. But the biggest challenge, of course, is to create a feasible funding plan, how we would fund those. We are also conducting a review of our capital delivery process with the help of an outside consultant, outside expert, to look at how we deliver capital, what our cost of capital, what our cost of delivering capital is, cost of construction is, how does that compare to our peers, how does that compare to industry standards, and how can we improve both our delivery process and the cost of construction. And then come back to the board to present a 5-year plan with some level of specificity in it. Right now, this is just sort of providing you the general parameters. Want to come back with a list of specific projects to present to the board. So I would be happy to answer any questions.
Questions or comments?
No, I had a question about that venture that we started in Chicago about 4 or 5 years ago. We have a board member on the board. It's not an Illinois project, but I think we started it. What's the name of it? Anybody remember? It's over in the old part of
UI Labs.
Silent
Point.
UI Labs.
UI Labs.
Yes.
UI Labs.
Oh, yeah.
We've not heard of what's going on there. It was a big flash at the outset, and what's going on? Anybody know?
I can try. UI Labs is still in operation. It's not really as closely linked to the university. Mm-hmm. So the governance process has changed somewhat. It's still in operation, but it has less connection with the university. Okay.
Sandy?
So back on, it was page 14, it described the process for prioritizing the big capital projects. And I guess my question is, I can understand how in each university, through their reporting structure, they could prioritize their projects for their university. What isn't clear to me is, once though each university has made their own list of their own priorities, how do they get feathered in with each other to make an aggregate list? What's the reporting structure? Where's that tough calls? Where are those tough calls getting made?
I think the way we are proposing to do it is that once we have the list from each university, and then we also have to look at each university's capacity to pay, you know, to be able to fund these projects. And then with the chancellors and the presidents and others sit down and we sort of put together the priority list within those parameters that are defined for each university.
Chancellor Pearl, if I can add to that, I think this process was required by the board to really get to that question. That's the essential question, is how do we rank order priorities, including the ability to pay and timelines and everything else, in a way that optimizes the delivery of the capital and the impact of that capital at the university individually, but also for the system. And I think that's what you're going to be seeing as we develop this capital plan. You're going to see a nested set of projects rather than coming forward in a more of an ad hoc approach, which has probably been true of the past in terms of ability to pay utilities, auxiliaries, et cetera. That's not to say that there's going to be a dampening of the opportunities that each university are going to go for, but we're going to look thoughtfully at and the board will be heavily involved in that, and those are the kinds of questions that we expect to come to the fore in this round.
I think the big advantage here is we're looking at a longer term time horizon in a very comprehensive kind of manner. In the past, we will just sort of looked at what's the next projects, what's the 1 year, and that does not necessarily optimize the whole capacity that we have. Okay. Trustee Edwards, you had say.
If we go back to the debt capacity issue on page, what page was that?
This one?
The one with the plus 400 million in our ratios, yeah.
Oh, plus one, okay.
No, the one that you had, the one with the ratios if we add 400 million of debt.
Right.
Yeah. We were talking about our debt capacity and we have to retire X amount over the next number of years and that will free up borrowing capacity as we retire debt. Is that debt retirement or cash need funded in our operating budget?
The debt retirement?
Yeah. In other words, when we get our budget, you know, normally capital is outside the operating budget. You know, you have income statement, cash flows, and balance sheet, right? And so when we do our budget, is the amount of debt service that you're saying we're going to pay off in the next 5 or 6, 7 years in that budget?
It will be.
Okay.
Is it? Because that's how we're changing it.
Okay. So we feel we have the cash flow to pay off that debt.
Yeah, because each project has been vetted. So it's not, each project has been vetted in terms of, even in the past, each project before the debt was issued, there was analysis done to see the ability to pay the debt.
Right.
Okay. So those funds are there, but it has never been shown in our operating budgets.
Okay. Yeah, I know some of the debt has dedicated revenue streams. I get that, but I'm talking about just, you know, our revenues and our expenses. Is there money after our revenues and expenses to pay off debt? That's, I guess, my question.
Right, there is.
Okay. Vijay, thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you.